This is Purple Radio on demand.
Hello, I'm your host, Dolly. Bertie, introduce yourself if you'd like.
I'm Bertie.
And Lottie. And Nick.
Hi, everyone.
Hello.
I've never had so much trouble getting people to introduce themselves before.
This week is called This Week Was Brought to You by Hoosock.
We love you, Hoosock!
Oh my god, Hoosock, I love you!
You know, when I put the Instagram...
Was that a swear? Oh, no!
I said fork. I like forks.
Okay. I think we should be able to keep that in.
So, we're back after a technical issue.
Sorry. I raised my hands up, you know? It happens.
So you can stand on mountains?
By the way, something funny about this week. Ain't this week was brought to you by Hoosock. We had a situation with the Instagram story, and I'm pretty sure it was because it said this week was brought to you by Hoosock. We got a little notification on the Instagram account saying, this looks like a sponsored post. We need you to make sure it meets our community
what?
Guidelines for
sponsors?
Sponsorship. No, it was just because
so
it said Hoosock this week was brought to you
by Hoosock. This episode of Hoosock Podcast is sponsored by Hoosock.
So... I think
for all your Hoosock
we
needs,
community guidelines
go to hoosock.com/hoosock.
Yeah.
Email in at who.society@durham.ac.uk.
First come, first serve. So get them in while you still can.
Anyway, why is this week brought to you by Hoosock? Well, first of all, we have
Please
one episode that Hoosock made and another one that Hoosock chose.
Woo!
Yay.
Fancy, fancy.
This is much better than the last time Hoosock chose something and it was Missy, a spoonful of awfulness.
Why are you staring at me, Bertie?
I wonder why, Charlotte.
Tell you what, Lottie, you've won two Hoosock decides in a word, in a row.
I've what?
You won two Hoosock decides in a row.
If I can't win the Taskmaster, then I've got to win Hoosock decides. I am the voice of the people. Is quite
the people's choice.
I am the people's
Charlotte Goldthorpe.
The people's choice.
So we've got Mind Your Manners.
I'm gonna put that in my AGM.
We've got Mind Your Manners and World Enough in Time. The Doctor Falls. Mind Your Manners, the 14th Doctor and Jason land in 1777, where they discover the Arris, creatures who value manners and politeness above all else, including human life. Can the Doctor and Jason muster enough rudeness to send them packing? Yes, that's right, everyone. We listen to an episode of Doctor Who, Out of the Shadows.
Ooh.
Yay!
That was just an unnecessary act of physical violence, and we'll just overlook that.
Anyway, let's not get too much physical violence. We don't have to edit anything out. For the listeners of this podcast, Lottie is referencing something that happened during the watch along.
If you were there, you were there.
Yeah, you had to have been there, guys.
Cool kids only. Cool kids only. Cool kids allowed. If you're not cool, get out of the treehouse, guys.
So, unfortunately, I forgot to create podcast notes. So this is going to be a little ramble. But
oh
you
my god,
know what?
Improv
a podcast
oh
like that. I'm shell-shocked. Anyway,
you prep.
Oh, Nick.
That works.
So, Nick, we do have a spare chair in the podcast studio.
And yes, you won't get that joke,
which,
I'm guessing.
Which could be thrown in some
direction. I feel like it should be reserved for the winners.
The winner of Hoosock Podcast sits in this chair.
Oh, my gosh. Wait, we have winners in this?
Didn't you know this?
No.
No, yeah, we've got like a competition going. For whoever can be in the most Hoosock podcast. We've not, but now it could be.
I mean, given I've been on all but two this year, I think I'm doing quite well on that one.
Ooh.
And then Billy has an unfortunate accident.
All right, Billy Big Leagues, come on.
Sometimes I can still hear their voice.
Ollie can no longer make it to any of the Hoosock podcasts for the rest of this year.
Well, it's not been here since, like, week three, I don't think.
Wait, hang on, yeah.
We never knew what happened to them.
Is that
Where are they?
Is that a zip in, like, the top of your forehead there, Ollie?
No.
Wait.
Why do you think they grew out this much hair? Does that zip's not supposed to be visible? It's the headphones is pushed by hair
is
back.
Is it inzippable?
That was awful.
It wasn't. Oh,
I
so,
loved it.
Mind your manners.
Am I forgiven? Forever and ever, cousin. Thank you, cousin.
Mind your manners. I know it's both Bertie's and our glorious Lord President Louis' favourite episode of Out of the Shadows. So, thoughts?
Yes, Bertie. What's your
Are you
thought?
Okay,
yeah,
Bertie?
Come on. You're not in us.
Yeah, no, it's my favourite episode of Oots. I thought it's very fun. Thank you. And that was my rating.
Nice. Oh. Yeah, I are you okay, Bertie?
You know, my diss is due next week. No, things are hard right now.
This is the summative season special
where we're all broken inside.
We are. Yeah. We're doing our best. We're laughing, but they're not real
laughing.
We're
laughing at the pain.
Nick, when's your diss due?
End of April. But I've got two summatives back to back before the end. One of which is due tomorrow.
Have you done it?
Nearly.
Who Sock Podcasts, the best place for procrastination.
Oh, man.
Listeners, you'll be safe.
Have you finished your diss yet? Email in.
Email in your diss.
Are you out of the shadows?
To be honest, let's find out. I wonder how much Out of the Shadows was written as exam procrastination. Because I know that a lot of conversations from the coffee shop I write is procrastination.
I'm going to guess 73%.
Oh.
Which I think is lowballing.
I think 81. 81?
I think less.
Less?
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah. What degree did Jacob do?
Politics, I think.
Ugh. Oh,
Jacob listens to these podcasts.
Bertie's rating of Jacob Cook just went...
Look, if you wanted to do politics but actually have fun as a person, you do sociology.
It does cast most.
I can't wait for Jacob to listen to this episode and like send a little message to the Matrix. Like, I've no idea what he's going to say.
He'll probably agree.
I look forward to
me.
It. Yeah, he probably will. Sorry, Jacob.
Do they
Jacob.
Have many exams in politics, or are they like?
I have no idea.
Because
I'd assume a lot of. Presentation.
The jury's out.
That's
a law. Pun.
That's law. Because like politics is the sad
there.
Version of sociology,
I can throw my phone at you.
And we have like two exams.
So you'd think easiest, unless they're very nasty questions.
Welcome to the exam podcast.
Anyway, do we want to talk about the actual episode?
We have the
Arist. They are it's a very fun concept. It's robots who.
In disguise.
Basically, they're the Hatfielders of aliens.
Yeah.
I think for me, they strike that perfect note between intimidating and also very hilarious.
Yeah. I think it's a good early series episode where...
What is going on?
Are you two okay?
What is going on?
Nothing. Nothing's going on. Nothing's happening.
We're gonna take a break now just for an...
Right, we're back after some issues that were technically not of the technical variety, but they were... anyway, we're back. So
it's not nice being called an issue, is it?
No, it's not. You know, we got told off. Dear listeners of
sitting in the naughty corner.
You know what?
Right?
Yeah. No, yeah. I'm going to say what happened. No. We were told to stand in the corner for 30 minutes until we could chill out.
For 30 minutes.
And clearly it didn't do anything.
It did nothing. If only it's caused our rebellion to burn brighter than ever before.
Do you hear the people sing?
Singing the songs of angry men.
We're going to get copyright
like
for that?
Shouting it and Nick's just going, like, singing it. Just singing it.
I'm a theatre kid.
I don't.
I love my DST membership.
Woo, DST! Will you join in our crusade? You will be strong and stand with me. Beyond the barricade, is there a world you
guys,
long to see?
Guys, you need to mind your manners, okay?
Oh, sorry.
Oh.
I'm going to disintegrate you with my little beam.
Pew, pew, gun.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Do it. Go on.
No.
Can we get back on to mind your manners? I really hate
You're
to be...
You're the one who dragged it up. Mind your manners. We're about to talk about
it. It's all coming out today.
It's all coming out today.
Yeah.
You tell us to stand in the corner for 30 minutes and then you distract us from the podcast.
It's like they don't want to be hosting the podcast.
Oh, you know what? Maybe there should be a revolution.
Maybe we should vonk them.
You realise we are basically just reenacting the plot of this episode right now.
Yeah.
I must say, one thing I like about Out of the Shadows in general, which is very like prevalent in this episode, is... how there is like it's very much a political commentary, especially on say capitalism.
Yeah.
And I think it's really interesting how the upper classes are portrayed in this episode, and the way that the way that they're shown, and like even the name of the villain, Arist, is presumably short for aristocrat.
The aristocrats.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking of the aristocrats. Yes. I was thinking of that.
Everybody.
But yeah,
everybody wants to be a cat.
We're so gonna get copyright strike.
Yeah. I think it's also. I remember like it was my favorite premise, like going into an episode to read creatures who value politeness above all else. There's one thing I question, which I talked about on Who's Views, which is, what do the Arist look like? Because in the poster they look like robots, but it confuses me that no one questions that there's just robots around.
I 1777. Assumed like the way they were designed, they like have like, you know, like aristocratic clothes, like accessories like umbrellas and stuff that could like mask them about.
But like, it's also like mask balls. One walks past the doctor and the doctor goes, "Oh, it's a robot," and we can hear the mechanical sounds.
Perception, I mean, you can hear maybe one of them's got a prosthetic leg.
I suppose you can headcanon perception filter, but that wasn't said in the episode.
Well, yeah.
But I do think it's a very fun concept, and I do enjoy it.
Does that really grind your gears?
I can't think of a good comeback to that.
I win. You win.
You win. Congratulations.
We have the winner.
Podcast. Thank you. I'm the winner of Who's Sock Podcast.
You can now be president next year.
I can now be president. No, because then I'll... Okay. Because then I have to be responsible. No. Good point.
Did you see Joseph's presidency?
Oh!
I am just disclaimer.
Hello,
I
Joseph.
Am
if you're listening,
Joseph,
to this,
I love you. Really.
Email in, Joseph. Actually, you know, come on in. Come on in. Come on into the studio right now. And hello.
Oh my God.
It's Joseph
Becker.
Good evening. That was a really good Joseph impression.
I'm so sorry, Joseph. I love your reign as Who's Sock President.
I don't think it's an amazing Joseph impression, but it's the best I can do at the moment.
Joseph was the first person I ever spoke to in Who's Sock, I think.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, because he was at the doors.
He was doing my job, yeah.
Yeah. Mm.
I'd like to note that Ollie's opinion on Joseph does not reflect the opinion of the society.
I thought you said Ollie's a pigeon.
I love Joseph.
They said, I'd like to note Ollie's a pigeon.
I am a pigeon.
Yeah. Pigeon Ollie. I'd still love you even if you were a pigeon.
Thank you. I've realised, I think I'm struggling to keep this one on track more than usual, partly because I didn't bring in any notes, so I don't know where to go with the on-trackness.
No, like,
and that was
a
downfall.
I don't have a track to get
having
it back on.
Having us on the podcast and having no notes to contain us.
This is us.
Unleashed!
This is the real us. You're getting to witness right now, folks.
Yeah.
You know,
this
we
is Doctor Who Unleashed.
We wanted a nice, chill,
You looked at me like you sort of wanted me to like you wanted to press a button and a spring would pop up and I'd fly out the ceiling.
That would be very entertaining.
Right, who's next?
Me.
Please.
Crunk. Something repressed sailors. Funny line.
I feel like that's sort of one of the iconic lines of Out of the Shadows, yes, is the repressed sailors line.
I love the ending of Mind Your Manners, in which it's like, has anyone seen Chitty Chitty Bang Bang?
Yeah.
You know,
long time ago.
Spoilers for Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
I'm going to
give you 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and I counted down from 4 on my hands. so I definitely know how to count. Social sciences. but at the end of Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, all the kids in the castle take the castle and defeat all like the adults who are all prim and proper and things like that. And ooh, I think these are urchins and everything. And it very much and Mind Your Manners is ending very much reminds me of that, where they're sort of chasing these kids around the house and it's sort of like they're having these Home Alone type escapes and things like that. And it's really enjoyable to sort of listen to. I don't know why.
It's fun. I think. The great thing about Doctor Who is you can explore, like in general, you can explore really, really dark themes, but you can also have fun and you can also be lighthearted and be silly and be whimsical.
Mm. And it doesn't feel out of place at all. It feels like they can naturally exist side by side.
And I think this episode manages to deal with serious themes while still, like, in a lighthearted way without detracting from the seriousness of the themes, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I think it's It's fun.
No, yeah, it's one that like it's definitely one to watch with the family, and it's a very good starter one, especially if you're getting used to Out of the Shadows for the first time.
I'm sorry, one to watch with your family.
Yeah.
We're back after some more technical issues. Lottie and Bertie keep going off on one.
We're not.
In terms
we're
of
just,
laughing.
No, we're not.
Ollie's laptop made a really funny noise.
It did.
And then me and Lottie, despite being autistic, locked eyes. And then we just lost it.
Yeah, it was a hive mind moment. It was something.
It's because we're cousins.
Yeah.
I'm too tired.
This feels
for
like
this.
The weirdest episode of The Bear I've ever watched. Hey, cousin!
Cousin! I really enjoyed this episode, cousin! I did too, cousin!
It's gonna be so weird once, like. Once this is played out in front of the family.
Yeah.
Like, cousins, like, settle down. We are now going to watch Out of the Shadows.
Yes. Wake up, dear. You haven't had your Out of the Shadows.
It would be quite fun to sort of act out of the shadows, like mime it whilst it's playing in the background.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, like a dramatic read-along.
Social idea.
A bit like Usoc, a dramatic read-along.
Not
but, like,
my problem anymore.
You've still got, like, a term and a bit of social sec.
And I've planned the two socials for next term. They're BBC Three, BBC.
Oh wait, are we getting an announcement right now?
The socials next term are BBC Class, and what we will be doing is dressing up as each character from BBC Class for both socials, and acting out BBC Class.
Amazing,
definitely.
I'm gonna have to get my school uniform.
Yes.
Oh God, I can bring my blazer up.
Delightful. You'll find the schedule out during the holidays, and it is, you know, we've decided to honour the best spin-off.
I mean, K9 and Company, but okay.
I mean, yeah. Have you heard the K9 and Company intro?
No.
K9.
One thing I've realised is, I think because we did the Who's Views on Out of the Shadows last term, there's not much original things I can say about Mind Your Manners, because I said most of my opinions on it then.
Should we add a link in the thing?
The listeners, if they really want, can go and find it.
Listeners, you may be interested to find out that Out of the Shadows was commented on, commentaried over. I don't know.
They just chatted.
We had a little bit of a chin wag.
A little bit of a chit chat.
We were distracted.
Yeah.
It happens, you know.
Hey, could we move on to
World Enough and Time, the Doctor Falls.
Yes!
Responding to a distress call.
The 12th
Doctor, Bill and Nardole, take Missy to a spaceship trapped in the gravitational pull of a black hole. But things go sideways when the situation transpires to be more complicated than they bargained for. As they try to escape a time-dilated ship, Missy and the Doctor must face up to one another and to what it means to be good.
I cried throughout the whole...
Yeah, I cried.
Just tears. Mm. Not ugly crying, you know, I was not snotting, but I was sobbing.
Respectful.
I was respectfully crying because...
I would like to also say, like, I don't think... Have we put a spoiler warning at the start? If you've not...
Oh, a spoiler warning!
No, yeah, if you have not
this is
seen...
what happens when I come into a podcast without notes.
If you have not watched these episodes and you've not seen... First of all...
You're so wrong for that.
Get off this podcast.
Why are you here?
Secondly... don't watch the trailer for series 10.
No.
And then watch series 10. Watch those two episodes. Beautiful. Gonna give you 4 seconds. 4, 3, 2, 1. Okay.
Then go to therapy after you watched them.
Yeah. Did you have a fun time? You back? You have to cry? Good.
Didn't mention that there were Cybermen or John Sims Master in this episode.
No, yeah.
Mm. Oh, it was done. So amazingly. I get really annoyed when people say they brought John Sim back for fan service.
Yeah, because they clearly didn't.
Yeah.
Because he perfectly fits with Missy's character arc, but he's not just there for Missy. He's done his own justice. And the fact that, like, Missy's final turn to good is thwarted by the Master is...
It takes self-sabotage to the next level.
It's arguably the most, like, awful thing that he's done. Is stopping Missy from turning good.
Mm.
Yeah,
it's easily like the best Master Story of New Who. It just absolutely nails the character.
I would argue it's the best Master Story. I'd argue it's the best Cybermen story, the best Build story, and probably the best Capaldi story.
I think Capaldi's my favourite out of all the Doctors.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say these two episodes are my favourite episodes. It's really hard to rank Doctor Who for me, but it's definitely in my favourite episodes.
It's just, if you think of the most iconic stories, for me, I think of this. I also think of, like, Hellbent, which, you know, is best friend Peter Capaldi acting his little pants off, because this episode, there is not one bad acting moment. Because the sheer horror, like, Pearl, bestie,
you
Pearl
delivered.
Mackie is slept upon. Poor. She is amazing. The directing between having Pearl acting and having the Cybermen there.
Perfect.
Oh my God. Whole, like,
and it's never overused.
No. And it makes you really realise that it's Bill in there and what Bill thinks of herself and the construction of herself. And it's done so well. And your heart aches for her.
Mm. Yeah, that's what makes the twist in World Enough particularly sting. Just because Pearl Mackie's acting all the way through, like, right from, like, the second Bill gets shot, and then the God knows like how many years she was down there, the way she interacts with Son Jim.
Yeah, the sort of like
Son Jim.
The the fear that can be derived from the Cybermen is that they were once human.
Mm. Yeah,
they were once like us, and but now they've lost all feeling and all control of what made them them.
And it's meant to be because it makes you, quote unquote, better.
Mm.
And having it in a hospital as well. Not
exactly.
Not a factory, a hospital.
And the horrifying part of this is, the horrifying part of that is stretched beyond by the fact that Bill is consciously still Bill and is holding on, grasping for dear life, quite literally for, like, their own sanity at who they used to be.
Which perfectly mirrors 12.
Yes!
Because 12 is grasping
on and just doesn't want to change and doesn't want to be like Bill says,
doesn't want to be
alive if they can't be them.
That bit of dialogue is genius.
Doesn't want to be written by Chibnall.
Not in your face at all.
Capaldi's genuine, it's one word, a genuine, like, sort of understanding immediate of, like, yeah, I completely understand.
Mm. And it's one thing, I was talking to Lottie about this on the way home, it's crazy to me how this episode juggles so many aspects. It juggles the characters of the Doctor, John Sims' Master, Missy, Bill, Nardole, the Cybermen, like the physics of the time-dilated spaceship. And all of those things, like, you would think in an episode like this that some things would be sidelined for other things. Like, you'd think it would be like, well, you know, the Doctor's character has done great, but we don't get enough focus on Bill. Or you'd think it would be like, well, you know, the Cybermen have done great, but is it at the expense of the Master? But no, none of that's the case. Everything is executed amazingly, and I don't understand how Moffat managed to make room for it all, because there's so many elements that are geniusly done.
It's especially impressive given how the stakes of this finale, particularly compared to Capaldi's other two ones, technically have the lowest stakes, because in this one, it's merely just saving the, like, billions of a solar farm. Capaldi himself, like, talks about how he doesn't even know if it's going to protect them for so long. It's just about buying them that amount of time. And it's such a, like, small act, just being kind and, like, giving your all against it. And it's still just instills so much drama from the situation. It's so hard.
12 and the being kind. I could never do 12 justice in the way that Joseph Booker can. But the fact that Capaldi's all his driving force is to be kind, and how he sees so much of himself in Missy, and it's just like, I just want them to be kind, and it hurts, like, it physically hurts watching it on the screen, because you're like, no, you are kind. And I don't think the 12th Doctor
ever truly realizes?
I think he realizes it in this episode. I think he realizes it when he's doing the speech to the Master and Missy that he is just being kind. And I think. Can I talk about music for a moment?
Because I was going to talk about it, but you go.
I've recently become very, very obsessed with Doctor Who soundtrack music and Murray Gold.
Recently?
I've always been interested, but I've over the last few weeks gone particularly fixated on
it. Nothing to do with a certain PowerPoint
night. So, the Shepherd's Boy is a beautiful, beautiful piece of music. I'm assuming that impression was not good enough to get us a copyright strike.
We're still in the clear, guys.
I think a lot of people think it was only in Heaven Sent when the Doctor was breaking the wall. And it's such an incredible piece of music. But it was used for the first time, for those of you who don't know, in The Day of the Doctor.
Blew my mind when I found that out.
When the three Doctors are saving Gallifrey. And it's like we hear it next in its proper full version, in its completed version, in Heaven Sent. And then it makes a reprise in this episode, as well as 12th Regeneration speech in The Doctor Falls. And if you listen for it, very briefly, it's in the giggle. It's in the giggle. Those of you who are in the podcast studio, I'm happy to play you the scene where it's in afterwards.
I think you showed me as well.
I did show you, Lottie.
Should I describe where it is?
Yeah, which part?
I want people to spot it.
Email in at who.society.
Whoever wants to crown.
Have you seen the Shepherd's Boy?
I'll give you I'll give you some hint. It's because otherwise you'll have no chance.
No.
Okay. I will do as Lottie
whoever
tells me.
I am the winner of the podcasts. Mm.
But I love the Shepherd's Boy as it's sort of it's not I don't think it was composed as a doctor's theme. It's not called the doctor's theme. It's not composed for a specific doctor, but it's used for the Doctor in moments of extreme determination. When they're doing something of magnitude, it's a song of hope, it's a song of, you know, like, in Day of the Doctor, he is, like, they're all, like, changing their past and changing their biggest moments of trauma and making it right again. In Heaven Sent, you've got his over billions of years gradually chipping away at that wall. In Twice Upon a Time, you have his speech where he sums up what it is to be the Doctor, and he finally accepts regeneration and changing. And I'm not going to go into too much detail in the giggle, but...
you can if you want to. Sorry, I agree. If they want to be winners of the podcast, if they want to take my crown...
But yeah, I think in this episode, I think it's used to highlight the fact that the Doctor has realised what it is to be a good person. Because he's made this speech, this beautiful, beautiful speech to the Master and Missy about being kind and being decent and being a good person. And I think it's beautiful that his final episode, I count Twice Upon a Time as a sort of epilogue. His final sort of full episode, his big finale, not being to save the universe or even just the world, it's a small band of people, even without hope. I love the mantra, without hope, without witness, without reward. He's being good when ultimately it will only affect a few people's lives and they will probably die soon anyway. And it's the ultimate, he could just go with the Master and Missy and leave in the TARDIS, in their TARDIS. But he doesn't. He does the... And it's that complete good. And I think that's the moment that he accepts himself. And I think the Shepherd's Boy playing as he has that determination. And while he's got no hope of saving these humans for long, he has hope that he is finally who he wants to be. And I think that's the beautiful thing that this music shows.
It's the perfect conclusion to his character arc. I mean, comparing him, end of series 10.
Am I a good man?
Start of his, exactly, yeah.
I feel like throughout Capaldi's era, we have different answers to the question, am I a good man? He asked it at the beginning of Into the Dalek, and at the end, Clara says, I don't know, but you try to be, and I think that's the point. Which is true, but it doesn't answer the question. In Flatline, he says he's the man who stops the monsters, but
we could count that as bravery or something like that, or heroism.
in Death in Heaven, he says, "I'm an idiot with a box and a screwdriver."
Relatable.
In Hellbent, he goes full crazy mode.
Mm-hmm.
As he should.
As he should.
I mean, yeah, 4.5
and
years to do that.
I feel like this is the moment where he's broken down, but then he realizes, and he does his little speech to Clara of, you know, of how to be good, and in a way how to be the Doctor as he's losing his memories. And then I think we finally get the ultimate answer in this episode of, I do what I do because it's right, because it's decent, and above all, it's kind. Yeah. And it's as simple as that. He is doing the best that he can do, and that makes him a good man.
Everything I love about the Doctor is encapsulated so perfectly in that speech. It's such, like, the core ideals of why they keep on doing it, like, all the way through the entirety of the show. Like, not like some straight out and out hero out there for the fame and the glory. Like, they're just doing it because they'll wonder. They just travel by, happen upon people, help out for the hell of it. And it's just such a simple character choice, but it works so well. Like, this is the reason, like, the show's, like, lasted for so long, because you've got a character with such big, like, morals. It's so simple, but it's powerful, and it's just such a great message, genuinely.
Exactly, exactly.
Like, every sort of... Bless you.
Thank you.
Every sort of inflection. I'm also going to talk about Pearl Mackey and Michelle Gomez and John Sims.
As you should.
John Sims?
John Sims.
Jonathan Sims?
Jonathan Sims
from the Magnus Archive?
Look, he always says John Sims.
It's because I keep thinking of Jonathan Sims. Because when you hear Jonathan Sims, head archivist of the Magnus Institute, London. That's on my repeat.
Statement begins.
That's in my head on repeat constantly every day, in and out.
Anyway, I was going to say, oh dear, kick the table. All the inflections and slight twitches in voice and pitch, and even in the movements of, like, in reaction to each of these sentiments that are said in this episode, because there are quite a lot of, like, it is an episode of revelations. I'm counting them both of that. But they're both, all the characters culminate into all these wonderful, like, written and acted characters culminate into this sort of ball of talent that I cannot even, like, there's limitless words to describe it. And Peter Capaldi, especially in giving these speeches, and that speech of kindness, you can even hear the sort of passion in their voice. They finally understand, like, this is what I've been searching for. This is what I'm trying to find out all this time. Am I good? And you know what? I am, because I do this kindness things.
And it's insane what you can do when you have the incredible talent coming together of the actors of Peter Capaldi, Pearl Mackey, Michelle Gomez, John Sim, and all the others, with the incredible writing in this episode from Stephen Moffat, and the speeches, and the incredible directing from, I apologise, I'm probably mispronouncing your name, Rachel Talalay.
Glorious.
Terrifying.
Wow. Absolutely. Terrifying.
This is like the nicest Doctor Who's ever looked.
Yeah. Like, I'm so glad she came back to direct the 60th.
Yeah.
It's just like, I absolutely adore it. It's sort of the sharp cuts, the smooth transitions, and then the sort of, it allows the audience to slowly grow terror without expressing it sharply within whip cuts and pans and things like that, or Texas switches or something that might be not Texas switches, that's Edgar Wright, but that might be shown in, like, Russell T. Davies's era of Doctor Who. But with this one, it's a growing terror and anxiety, especially in World Enough and Time, where, so take Bill Cyber realization moment. We've got these two scenes side by side. We've got the Master and Missy, Razor and Missy, and then we've got Nardol, the Doctor, and Cyber Bill, and then we've got us ourselves as the audience who get to view all of this. And we take it from the perspective of the Doctor when we're looking at the Cyber Bill realization scene. And both, I've just realized it now, they're both scenes of like revelation, and they're both done, and they so well, and not like cheaply as like, oh, this has happened and now that's happened. But no, there's a slow anxiety to both of them. They build up and they creep up and they sort of, they stay with you.
Yeah. And they link it, they also link into each other because you have like, Missy goes, the ship is from Mondas, and then we see the Mondas.
Accessing Bill Potts. And it's just like, and we know, and we've got like a twinge in our heads of like, please don't let that be Bill. Please don't let that be Bill.
And you have that glimmer of hope that maybe it's just a random Cyberman.
Maybe it's just a random Cyberman.
And then know that it's Bill.
It, allowing the audience to jigsaw together a story or even a consequence or something. I absolutely love that. That's my I'll have that for a 5-course meal, you know?
I remember
No crumbs.
I remember watching this episode
tipping very well.
I think I hadn't watched the Series 10 trailer because I didn't know going into this that there were Cybermen or the Master. And I remember looking at like watching it and thinking like, for instance, seeing the words conversion theater and being like, is that Cybermen? And, like, the guys with bags over their head, could they be primitive Cybermen? And being unsure. And I think it's really clever when you can hint at something enough that you've got some vague idea, but you're not sure.
I do wish that if there was anything to change about these episodes, and that's probably heresy coming from me, but, like, I do wish that, like, the conversion theatre stuff, that was done a bit more subtly. Like, I don't know how you would do it, so it's very easier said than done. But if it gave a little less, it would be an even bigger surprise for when we see Bill in the conversion theatre and when they talk about, oh, you're going to turn me into one of those things with pain and everything like that. We'll still feel the pain, but this will just stop you... you know, caring about it and stuff like that. And we finally see the handles of the cyber helmet head.
But, helmet, I'd say.
The sort of the build up and the jigsawing and the sort of jengering of all these different parts of it. I love it so much.
I love that we as an audience are only just a couple of steps behind. But the being just one or two steps behind makes it even more terrifying.
I love being in the dark about things in terms of like when I'm watching something. When I was younger or something like that, when you're watching a film or something like that and you think, well, it'll be all right in the end because, you know, it's got to be all right in the end. The good guys always win in the end. It'll be fine. But when you get something like this, this sort of this sort of storyline where the where you don't exactly know what's happening, you're a little bit behind, you're just thinking, okay, so we're in this new place, there's nothing really recognizable here apart from this, maybe this, so maybe it's this. And
I feel like it also enhances the time distortion aspects of the plot, like how you have the Doctor and the others up on the upper floors, it's only been a few minutes for them while they're trying to work out like what's going on versus all those years Bill is stuck down there.
One thing I really like, one of the many, many things I really like about this episode is because Moffat's really good at having timey-wimey sort of story devices and playing with time. I love that in this way he plays with time in a way that does actually happen. Not in our real lives, obviously, because we're not parked next to black holes. But like,
that's what you think.
The exact physics of the situation obviously isn't accurate, and it the story wouldn't work if they did it perfectly. But it's near enough, and it's like I love the fact that he's brought the real physics of roughly what would actually happen if he parks a really, really long ship that way against a black hole. And I think among all the other insanely good things that this episode show does, it brings the show back to its roots of being educational, because it teaches, like, this is how general relativity works. This is, like, this is what black holes do to time.
And in that teaching, we get the audience screaming at the screen, hurry up!
Years from now, clips from this episode would just be shown in lecture halls.
I'm going to be learning about
general relativity. So what did the doctor do wrong at this point? Next year. They stopped to explain.
They stopped to explain general relativity.
Mm. I love that he is, what, 2 hours late? To save?
Yeah, 2 hours.
Yeah, 2 hours late to save Bill.
Out of 10 years.
Yeah. And for him, if he was just a couple seconds less chatty.
Yeah.
If he was a second less chatty.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I think the Master timed it deliberately like
that. I was going to say, we were talking about this last night, because knowing the troll that they are, they absolutely... Like, the exact moment the Doctor like comes down is when Bill is like finally converted. I love that they just... My masterminded it all in their head, like the exact timings it would take for the Doctor to finally it's make awful. It all the way
what
down.
Else, yeah. What also hurts is like the fact that I don't think the Master could. Master is clever enough to find a way to trick Bill to go into the conversion theatre.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, easy.
They didn't have to spend 10 years building a relationship.
At one point, he's like, "You're like my mother," and Bill's like, "Whoa!"
You're like mother to me.
Like, he didn't. He didn't need to do it.
And
he did.
Like, he did because
think about
it's
someone
gleefully
you've known for
devious.
10 years. Like, if you've known someone, like, if you can think of someone you've known for 10 years, like,
just my family members.
If they genuinely this whole time didn't care about you and it was just a ruse to just cause someone you know as much
and
pain
not,
as possible.
And not even didn't care about you, didn't even, like...
consider you worthy enough.
No, yeah, and even mocks you after your... Do we count Bill as dead at that point?
I don't,
no,
because
Bill's
she's still Bill.
Dead. Bill's
she's
Bill.
Just, she's dying.
Ing.
Yeah,
and
it's
she's covered in machine parts.
Yeah.
Mm.
It really is... Talk about putting salt in the wound. And
It's. I think one of the amazing things about this episode is the incredible cruelty of the Master. Mm. It makes you.
It's a. Yeah. It's a licorice type cruelty.
I think the Master, is done well when you really hate him.
No,
I think of the Sound of Drums, and the way he rounds Martha's family up like that, even when they were helping him. I think, and Last of the
Gleefully
Time Lords.
Terrible. Mm.
And Last of the Time Lords, when he's treating the Doctor as a dog and keeping them all as slaves and having fun with them, and then you see the bruises on his wife's face. And the way, and then, he's a really indescribably despicable person.
And the sheer
Moffat
pleasure.
Really, really gets that spirit in this episode.
Do we prefer Moffat's Sim Master, or do we prefer RTD
God,
Sim Master?
I mean,
I don't know.
I think I prefer Moffat, but I think there's
Moffat
three caveats to that. Firstly, John Sim is about 10 years more experienced as an actor.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, you've got Rachel Talalay directing him.
Yeah.
And thirdly, I think it's hard to know how Moffat would have written an episode that was about him, when in here... He does amazing things in his own right, but his function in the plot is to serve Missy's character arc and the Doctor's character arc and the plot of what happens with Bill. And it's hard to know what he'd be like if he was front and centre. However, to be fair, if I'm saying I liked him better like this, surely if he was front and centre, I'd like him even more.
Yeah.
But...
He plays so well against Michelle Gomez. You should not have that much chemistry with yourself. as a concept.
Honestly, yeah.
But I think that's also what makes them so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
We've never had a multi-master story on TV. And
how has that never happened before?
Yeah, it's such a unique concept. Because, you naturally think at some point the show must have done it.
Up until this point, up until... World Enough and Time, that's a missed opportunity. It's no longer a missed opportunity because they did it, and they did it the best they could have
the
done
best way
it.
Yeah,
sometimes in an episode you look at like the way an actor is performing and think, oh, you're doing really well, I'm gonna focus on you and see like what you're doing, what you're up to. In this episode you're looking at every single person
and everything works together so connected. Well,
it's the best that you're
Victoria
just
sponge cake.
The best Victoria sponge cake.
Even Matt Lucas is firing like Nardole's exit. Genuinely one of the most underrated.
I'm going to name a town after you.
Companion departures.
A really rubbish one.
Yeah. Like,
maybe even a pig. Probably a pig.
Like he even gets like his own emotional farewell where he is, by this episode's own admission, a comic relief character.
Yeah.
But I love when the secondary companion gets a focus, and he is not done dirty in this episode. Mm. Maybe he's focused on less than the others. But like he is the reason that they get away from the bottom floor and the Cybermen, because he's gone and got a spaceship.
The like doctor's dead. Without Tommy, he'd always hate you. Let's go.
Doctor's dead. It's Tommy like always hated you.
Yeah, you said like, that the first time.
that's a great bit.
It's genius. Like, there's such good comedy in this episode, but it never detracts from the tension of the moment. Mm-hmm.
And it is terrifying. That like, just the pain over and over. And you're sweet Jesus.
It's electrifyingly terrifying. It's, you know, awful. It's like it sends shockwaves through your spinal
and then
column.
You add that to like the colouring of like, because each floor has a very different colouring.
Oh
my God. I love the sort of I talked about it in when we were doing the watch along, but the 1940s, 30s hospital combined with the sci-fi element, and just they sort of blend together in this mix match of like hope and optimism of a hospital, however 1940s 1930s like blitzy atmosphere, utter destruction, just sort of decrepit, whatever it is, it's tumbling down, and then you've got this sci-fi, this new age, this new world, and the fears that come with that of like, but what will this world become? It becomes the Cybermen, Cyber Foundries. And the sort of mix match of that, it's like it's off, but it's so off, it's right.
Also, the line of, I'm misquoting, but when there is tears, there is hope.
Mm. Yeah. Oh.
I don't think it is.
Makes crying about your summatives all the sweeter.
it's a tribute to the third. Like, it's a, because that's what the third Doctor says during his final moments. Well,
Jane, don't cry. While there's life, there's always, and then he dies.
Which is like,
I never
really
realized
nice
that.
Wave.
12 in the TARDIS.
Oh, yeah, when he's about to regenerate, when he wakes up and when the TARDIS lands, every word he says is a reference to another regeneration scene, which is brilliant.
Yeah.
He starts, Sontaran's, let me go through it with you.
He starts off with a classic.
Sontaran's reverting the course of human history, which is Tom Baker's first line, or at least one of his first lines. I don't want to go. Obviously, David Tennant's last line. When the Doctor was me, Matt Smith's last line. It started, I'm regenerating, is David Tennant's last line before he has the Metacrisis regeneration.
Oh.
And then the no, that's Patrick Troughton's last line.
Or any, you know, any just sort of side character before their death.
That's not about, so, yeah, that's making me, that's kind of low-key foreshadowing then the first Doctor's entrance at the end of the episode in a way.
Yeah, it's so clever. It's so clever, and I love the reference to Tom Baker's regeneration with the going through the companions saying Doctor Rory was done dirty.
Yeah, Rory, come on.
Jenny with Ebba, not Rory. Come on now.
I like how sleeping on all the companions, and then as soon as like Michelle Gomez says Doctor, whoa.
Yeah,
that's
good morning.
That's Michelle Gomez's effect in general.
Yeah.
Can I just? Also, I think we need to talk about for a moment the final scene with the Masters.
Yeah.
Oh,
that shot! Ah, quite literally.
Stunning.
It's
the perfect ending to the Master.
And the BAFTA, really the Academy Awards, People's Choice Awards.
The only person who could kill the Master, really, is the master.
Yeah, and I think it's out of all the horrible things in this episode, I think the most heartbreaking for me is that the Doctor never finds out that Missy turned good.
And also that Missy dies and is left just sort of alone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Without and any sort of schemes or plans or anything to sort of... Like,
without one, hope, yeah. without witness, without reward.
The one time that, yeah, the master generally tries to do something good, they literally get sabotaged by themselves.
And, which is probably one of the most horrific things. Yeah. Mm. That he can't even let himself be happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he boasts about it then. Yeah. And he sort of he digs it in like a cat with its claws. It, and it's, like,
it's, as I said at the beginning of the podcast, I think it's the most evil thing that Master ever does. And he causes the apocalypse for a year. Yeah. To me, this is the most evil thing he does. And I think if you want to look on a sort of total like lives taken standpoint, I'm sure the Master, because of this happening, will cause much more evil and harm in the future. But, like, it also just feels the most evil.
A lot of people wonder about Szechuan's master and where they follow on from. In my perspective, I believe that Missy is the last incarnation of the master.
I like that as well.
I like the idea of it being the complete last.
I like the idea.
Oh, yeah.
I also like the idea of, obviously, so Missy is left alone. The doctor makes it out. Bill makes it out. Like, everyone else makes it out. And then when, you know, she wakes
Nardole
up...
Nardole doesn't.
Nardole! I forgot about that, Bessie.
Nardole regenerates into Szechuan.
Like, everybody, apart from Nardole, makes it out. Like, the doctor makes it out, and the doctor didn't go back for her body.
Well, I mean, he couldn't because too close to a black hole.
But can you imagine, like, they might be feeling... quite royally annoyed about that. So I can see...
Oh, God, yeah.
I can see how Michelle regenerates, turns into Sasha, and then is like, oh, like, he's the doctor. He can make anything happen, but couldn't come for me.
And I think Chibnall could have done something incredible with the combination of that. And with the combination of...
I never understood why they...
And the combination of finding out... The Timeless Child is a terrible arc, but there's something you could have done with the Master's characterization of finding this out, finding he was lied to his whole life, and that being the thing that breaks him and turns him evil again. That could have been heartbreaking.
I thought that maybe they were going to make the Master be the Timeless Child. So not only have they sort of used the Master, put literally drum beats in their head, used them throughout the Time War, sort of used them as a pawn in their game of galactic chess. And not only that, but their whole life is a complete lie and has been used by the Time Lords and things like that. And instead they sort of go for a good old Chosen One arc.
It would have made so many of like Sasha Doan's master's like actions like the sheer bloodthirstiness is like violent, like,
and it makes sense how unhinged he is, even compared to any master who come before, how rageful he is to have come from that emotional turmoil that Missy went through.
Mm-hmm.
I love her line about how she loved being him and how, like, you know, seeing the pretty shapes the smoke made and the feeling of being evil. And it feels, my interpretation, I was talking about this with Lottie in the session, and we have slightly different interpretations. And I don't think either is right or wrong.
Oh, yeah.
My interpretation of that is, in that moment, it's hard to say how she's feeling, but I see it as like she's almost play acting being evil, and she feels like she's got her chance to do this again, but she can't experience the joy of being evil, and she's acting like she can, sort of for the master, and because she needs to like convince him that she's actually being evil, but she can't make herself feel that joy anymore. And I feel like that's what's referenced in that line.
I take it as like they almost... Have you ever sort of had your favourite food for a long time and then one day you eat some of it and you're like, it's not as good?
Average autism experience.
Ginger nuts. I ate an obscene amount of them in first term, first year, and now I... don't have
or
a
maybe
million, that's enjoyment
and
anymore.
Maybe someone introduces you to like bourbons, something like that, and you're like, well, I'm not very keen on bourbons. So you get used to bourbons and things like that. This is a very weird metaphor, but what I'm trying to say is this: Missy gets sort of so far into trying to be good from my perspective, that yes, they also try to feel like how they did before, but they can't. But I don't see it as a sort of play acting. I see it more as they are almost feeling this, this feeling, but are not quite there. And then there's a sort of maybe voice in their head saying, like, this isn't right.
So what you're saying is she tried so hard and got so far. But in the end...
Finish it, Nick.
Finish it.
I've done it too much.
Finish it.
That's not how I see it.
Okay.
So for me, it was her wanting to feel like that again because it's easier not to care. Like, it's so much easier not to care because you don't have to deal with any of the emotions that come from failing. If you do not care, you don't care. And you can take pleasure in being evil. But as soon as you are... You sort of taught to care. She was taught to care. She did so much self work.
Yeah.
It's like when you go to therapy. Bessie went to therapy. Should her therapist have been the 12th doctor? No. Absolutely not. But Bessie went to therapy.
They should have gone to flipping, like, I don't know. Just they both should have gone to therapy.
Yeah.
So, like, she tried so hard and she misses not caring because now she's got all the conflicting emotions and having emotions. Very exhausting.
Yeah, that is pretty much my interpretation of it. Yeah.
So she's just sad that she has to feel things.
Especially when you're the master and you've done God knows what.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do take it more as like from that line that she says, like, I'm not too sure. I'm in two minds about it. Fortunately, the other one's unconscious.
Yeah. Yeah. An insanely good episode.
And the fact that we're able to talk about it so much.
I could talk about it for hours on end, but unfortunately we have to move on to questions now. Unless anyone's got any closing thoughts they really want to talk about.
Peter Capaldi!
Peter Capaldi!
Lovely Peter Capaldi. I
BAFTA. Anyway. Where is it? Robbed.
Robbed!
The Doctor never falls down in the episode, bar being knocked down, so blown up. What else might you title the episode?
Crying.
That's what Lottie asked.
You didn't have to call me out.
What would you name it? Oliver Buck, head writer.
Teld Enough and Wyme. The Foctadols.
The Doctor Trips, not in that way.
No. I can't think of anything.
It's okay, honey.
Boomtown 2.
The Electric Boogaloo!
I mean, literally name dropped in the episode, but Genesis of the Cybermen. Well, you could do a resolution, just call it Genesis. Then, unless people think that's a Phil Collins tribute.
Exodus.
It's not even a Genesis of the Cybermen, though, because it's not, it's just a parallel
start. It's not
the beginning of any of the Cybermen that we know. They acknowledge that,
like, wherever, whatever universe it is, whatever world, the Cybermen
you
are inevitable.
You get Cybermen and smartphones and Donald Trump.
The Cybermen shuffle. My two partners from the past meet. It goes badly. A story.
Not clickbait. Meeting my ex. Not clickbait.
My ex
gone
is
wrong.
Me. A fall in love. Not clickbait.
Slow burn.
Enemies to enemies and lovers.
Enemies and lovers.
There was only one escape pod. Oh my god! And they were roommates.
Oh my god!
They were roommates.
Okay there?
Yeah. My brain went to, and I don't think this would be a good idea. I think this would be too on the nose. My brain went to just a good man. But I think that would be too on the nose. I think that needs to be more implicit.
Kind.
Kindness.
I think that's got the same issue as a good man.
Yeah, too on the nose.
Evil.
Hit them with that plot twist.
Slay both literally and literally.
That's the Cybermen and the Master.
If you really want to be...
That wouldn't spoil anything.
The two Masters. Although I'm sure one of the audio dramas has probably stolen that.
Yeah. Okay.
Question?
Would you swear at the Arist for fun?
Yes.
Yeah, why not?
Yes, I absolutely
would. I would immediately duck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, or if I knew I was going to die, I'd make sure it was a good one. You know?
I feel like I've just realised... I think there's a missed opportunity in the episode of
Doctor
making
Who's
a joke about them loving the profanity filter and being like, wow, people aren't swearing as much. This is wonderful.
I think I might do dodging swears. So, you know, like ship.
Yeah.
I think they should have made a joke about Purple Radio.
Purple Holy Radio podcast.
Demand.
And why we can't swear on here.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's I think of New Earth and Cassandra going, oh, that's... And then the Doctor cuts to the Doctor going...
Bit rich.
Bit rich. Anyway, I wanted to know, which Doctors do you think would fail the Arist vibes check?
Nine.
Yeah, definitely
nine. He is one of the
sassy.
Girlies.
He's too sassy.
Because I'm Northern.
Three would be fine, and so would one. Mm.
Two five as well.
Probably not five.
Five would settle in quite well.
Two is too much for a gremlin.
12 would be alright for a bit and then would punch someone.
Mm. As he Never ought. Be,
yeah.
As we have evidence.
13 would have been alright.
Mm.
And I say that in the most derogatory way possible.
Mm. See, I agree. Joe wants to know, why is Lordhead actually the second best character in all of Doctor Who history after only Z4? So for context, Joe played Lord Whitehead in this episode.
Joe, you're wrong.
Oh no, they did not. Oh. Oh.
Well, Joe is now about to break down the door.
Go on.
Not again.
Joe, we can't keep paying Maiden Castle.
We're already on thin ice with Purple Radio. Like,
Purple Radio is so thin.
Owain wants to know, not a question, but give the politest regeneration speech you can. If it's all right with you, Doctor, I would like it if you could just hold on for just a millisecond. I just really, really want to get it right. I have one or two things I'd like to say to you if it's not too much trouble. I'm going to start with the basics. I don't want to patronize you. I just want to start with the basics. So I would advise that you shouldn't ideally be cruel. You probably shouldn't be cowardly. And I would advise against consumption of pears. Hate isn't the best idea. I'd avoid it. But love is good. You can do that one. You know, if you want to be nice, that would be good. But especially kindness, that's even better. Probably avoid telling people your name. But, like, if that's okay with you, I understand if that's too much trouble. But, like, I mean, if you want to tell children your name, that's fine. But, like, nobody else, if that's okay with you. You know, my best advice, and you don't have to follow this advice because I realize I'm sorry if I'm being patronizing, but I would suggest that you laugh hard, run fast, and be kind. You can go now, Doctor. Sorry for holding you up.
Wow. So kind. So respectful. So dignified.
So we've basically got some house ground rules before you move in. So you... I'm not going to go through the whole thing because it'll take too long. There we go.
Just feel like you've done it.
Before you go into the flat, let's just create some ground rules. Never be cruel. Don't really be cowardly. It's on the fridge. You can just read it.
I'll level with you because you seem like an all right guy already. But just in case, don't be a knob. Is that swearing?
I think we're fine.
Hey,
you're not.
I'd rather not go.
Oh, if it's okay with you, and I mean, I really don't want to be an intrusion. Do you mind if I just stay a couple more minutes? Like, it's really raining outside. I've got a really new outfit. But you know what? If I'm an issue, I will just leave.
The doctor.
I'm so sorry.
The doctor really said I'm not ready to move on to the next part of my day.
I've got to procrastinate right now. Hang on.
I mean, I've heard this, like, a lot of people say that we all change, I think. But, you know, we're all quite different. That's okay. That's good. You got to keep moving. You know, just remember me when you're all famous and that, you know. I mean,
not in an ego-y way.
No. Yeah. I'm not saying you got an ego. No, I'll just go. That's my regeneration. I'll just leave.
So sorry for inconveniencing you.
Hopefully the next one will be.
I've realised, right. I think we've all conflated politeness with social anxiety.
Is there a difference at this point?
I'm too socially awkward to say something right now.
Can you imagine a doctor, like, just going like, oh, it started. I'm regenerating. Oh, thank goodness, I've got this speech. Wait.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
And next question, have we got a question?
There's one more thing that...
we've got one more thing.
Ooh. We've got one more thing.
A thing.
Thing one or thing two.
Our esteemed writer of... World Enough in Time. No.
We've got Stephen Moffat.
No, our esteemed writer of Mind Your Manners, Jacob Cook, head writer of Doctor Who Out of the Shadows, head writer Jacob Cook, has sent in a lovely little behind-the-scenes sneak peek at some fun trivia of how he came up with the ideas for the Arist and how this was going to originally slot in the series and earlier drafts and that sort of thing. It's a very fun thing. You can we're going to put it at the end of the podcast. So I hope you enjoy that. But for now, it's goodbye from me, Ollie,
goodbye.
From Bertie, Lottie.
I'm in your walls.
And Nick Lemieux.
Okay. Goodbye, everyone.
Hello there, Who's Up Podcasts? It's Jacob here, writer, actor, director of Out of the Shadows, as well as moonlighting Matt Smith Impressionist. And yes, I do use that line in job interviews. Russell, return my calls. It's honestly incredible that you're still showing these episodes, even long after I'm gone. The legacy of Shadows continues. I just thought I'd pop in and share a little bit of behind-the-scenes trivia on this episode. Some stuff you may have heard before in previous podcasts, others never been revealed before. So to start out, the selling point of this episode, the Arist. Honestly, not as original an idea as they may sound. The original concept of the monster was something called the Blemier. They're a creature from Roman and North African mythology. Creatures that essentially had heads in the centre of their chest. I'd taken those from a Rick Riordan novel, The Dark Prophecy, where he'd used those characters and made them incredibly polite. Originally, they were meant to be the monster in episode 1, and you can see the similarities there of these darkened alleyways, the homeless. And so I very much clung on to those themes when I moved them into episode 3, but at the same time took the concept and shaped it to be more of my own styling, because it did feel like I was just half-inching an idea that probably wasn't from mythology in the first place. The process of writing this episode, it took just over a week, 3 months into lockdown, so you can imagine. And I think when I add that context, a lot of the script makes a lot more sense. I believe nearly the entire second half was written in just over 48 hours. All of that shows. This episode was originally episode 10, so coming right after Conquest of Sontar. However, we did lose the original episode 3. It was called Ghost Dancers. It was about a Native American tribe. Not really something we could practically make, given what Durham had to offer. So I shifted that round, and that's where the fourth wall rose up. But I think it does work here. There are certain scenes that do show. So the conversation in the drawing room, the how long is always seen, very much embeds later in the series and does set up a lot for the finale. I think here, could have possibly done with a bit of tweaking, but I still think it is a very strong scene. When it came to recording, you can imagine the repressed sailor's line took quite a few goes. I still remember in the read-through getting to that scene about a page before the line itself, and the whole call just leaning in and waiting. I got about halfway through before I broke, and consequently, so did everyone else. In the actual recording session, the first take I fluffed it, second take, dead on, but then I fluffed Take the Doctor to the Bedroom. Lastly, something made quite a bit more explicit in the episode itself rather than the first draft. The implication that an Arist was left behind, just hearing that little crackle of energy. Did I mean to leave an Arist on Earth? Ooh, I don't know. There's a possibility for someone to pick that up, and maybe someone will. I will say that in a future script that I've written, a character makes a reference to that Arist in Crystal Palace. That line was cut from the final draft, but it'll set up that possibility that maybe one day they come back. And honestly, I would love that. They are fantastic monsters. A real sense of enjoyment comes from writing them and listening to them. So if anyone wants to pick that up, you know, you have my blessing. But of course, that does raise a question. What script were they mentioned? And really, it's not important what script they were mentioned, given the line doesn't exist. What's important is who that character was and who they were talking to. But I'm sure you'll find that out soon enough. What can I say? I've got bad habits for teasing people. Enjoy the rest of your podcast, Usopp. I'm sure I'll be back soon enough.
So, unfortunately, because we decided to put that at the end of the podcast, you don't have a rest of the podcast to enjoy. But thank you, Jacob. Yay.
They won't let us leave the studio!
Purple Radio Podcast. Thanks for downloading this Purple Radio podcast. For more great content and to listen live, head to purpleradio.co.uk.